Translation given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasdev, the incarnation of Vasudev who compiled the Vedic scriptures. The pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge, dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasdev, the incarnation of Vasudev who compiled the Vedic scriptures. The pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge, dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. Purport. Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. In pursuance of the specific utterance Vedase, or the compiler of the system of transcendental knowledge, Srila Sridhar Swami has commented that the respectful obeisances are offered to Srila Vyasdev, who is the incarnation of Vasudev. Srila Jiva Goswami has agreed to this, but Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has made a further advance, namely that the nectar from the mouth of Lord Krishna is transferred to his different consorts, and thus they learn the finer arts of music, dance, dressing, decorations, and all such things which are relished by the Lord. Such music, dance, and decorations enjoyed by the Lord are certainly not anything mundane, because the Lord is addressed in the very beginning as Para, or transcendental. This transcendental knowledge is unknown to the forgotten conditioned souls. Srila Vyasdev, who is the incarnation of the Lord, thus compiled the Vedic literatures to revive the lost memory of the conditioned souls about the eternal relation with the Lord. One should therefore try to understand the Vedic scriptures, or the nectar transferred by the Lord to his consorts in the conjugal humor, from the lotus-like mouth of Vyasdev or Shukadev. By gradual development of transcendental knowledge, one can rise to the stage of the transcendental arts of music and dance displayed by the Lord in his Rasa Leela. But without having the Vedic knowledge, one can hardly understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's Rasa dance and music. The pure devotees of the Lord, however, can equally relish the nectar in the form of the profound philosophical discourses and in the form of kissing by the Lord in the Rasa dance, as there is no mundane distinction between the two. So, Namastasmai Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vedase Papur Gyanamayam Somya Yan Mukhamburu Hasavam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasdev, the incarnation of Vasudev who compiled the Vedic literatures. The pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Veneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhye Bacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, Hare Krishna, everyone. So we are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, The Process of Creation, Text 24. I'd like to obviously ask for everyone's blessings, those watching online and on site, especially the senior devotees, and forgive me for any mistakes I may cause. Very, very interesting set of verses. I mean, we can see that the last few verses, this whole week, it's been kind of extolling the glories of the Lord's potencies in relation to creation. And as Antaranga Prabhu actually mentioned, I think in yesterday's class, in the question answer session, when Srinivas Prabhu was delivering that, these are very prayerful verses as well. So, and there's a very kind of prayerful mood here when describing that Lord's glories and his potencies. So here, in this purport, I mean, if you look at the verse itself, it's going on from not just his potencies in terms of what he does within the creation, in terms of his incarnations as Purusha and how he creates the modes of nature. Now it's actually looking at his scriptural potencies and looking at the potency of the Vedic scriptures. And then Prabhupada goes on to say in the purport how these scriptures, they should be understood in the disciplic succession from Vyasadev. And then at the same time, it's interesting actually. It's on one hand, it's saying that yes, it should be understood in the disciplic succession through gurus. And at the same time, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is mentioning here that also these same Vedic scriptures are also being transferred to the Lord's different consorts and manifesting through not just scriptures, but through art, art forms like music, dance, and all these kind of things as well, which is very interesting. And Prabhupada, if you look at the purport, Prabhupada is continuously glorifying the artistic aspect of the Vedic scriptures, but at the same time emphasizing that we cannot understand the artistic aspect unless we actually have a good, solid scriptural understanding, right? Because otherwise we'll get misconstrued with it. And eventually when we do understand the artistic understanding, then we can even realize that there is no distinction between the Vedic scriptures and what they're talking about, and it's non-different from, and this is getting quite esoteric here, the Lord's Rasa dance. And even the kissing that he does within the Rasa dance is no different from the scriptural truths, the tattva that is being given here. It might be very difficult in the initial stages of Krishna consciousness to see how these injunctions in the scriptures relate to this very kind of like, rasic activity that Prabhupada is talking about here. So I think the first thing that I want to look at here is the importance of tattva and rasa, and how in Krishna consciousness, and this is something obviously Prabhupada talks about again and again, that before we understand what rasa is, we need to know what is tattva, right? Tattva and rasa have to go hand in hand. So I have a quick question for all of you. Can someone tell me what does tattva mean? Any ideas what tattva is? Yes, Bishal Prabhu?
Principles.
Okay, principles. Anything else? Yes, Srinivas Prabhu, of course, you would know. No.
Knowing the absolute truth.
Okay, so tattva, thank you, Prabhuji. Yeah, so tattva means philosophy, spiritual truth, having the full understanding of something. Okay, so that's tattva. What is rasa then? Any ideas what rasa might mean? Yeah, taste, mellow, relationship, all these kind of things, right? Very emotive in nature. Tattva is very kind of like knowledge-based, intellect, understanding, understanding ontological position of something, whereas rasa is more about the emotional connection that you're developing. But it's said that until we know tattva, we will never understand rasa, right? Which is why if you look at this purport, Prabhupada is emphasizing that, you know, such music, dance, decorations enjoyed by the Lord are certainly not anything mundane, right? The Lord is para, he's transcendental, right? So therefore, once you try to understand the Vedic scriptures or the nectar transferred by the Lord to his consorts in the conjugal humor. So yes, there is this knowledge and it's coming through conjugal humor. That is almost like a romantic rasa, but it has to be first understood in the right process, right, through the disciplic succession. And by gradually developing the transcendental knowledge, then one can understand, come to the stage of the transcendental way of understanding art, music, dance, things like that. So this is very important. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he mentions This is a famous verse. Siddhanta boliachite nakara alash. Iha hoite Krishna lage shudradi manas. Right? So, Siddhanta boliachite. So when it comes to Siddhanta, discussing Siddhanta, right? Nakara alash. Alash means like lazy. Don't be lazy. Because only by hearing the philosophy, the mind becomes very strong. Right? Shudradi manas. And only a strong mind can relish the beauty of the Lord's pastimes. There's a nice analogy that Sutapa was once giving, but it's actually true as well. It says that in Bengali cuisine, because you know Chaitanya Charitamrita is to do with like Bengal Gaudiya Vaishnavism and things like that, right? So in Bengali cuisine, it says that you know there's in Ayurveda there's a certain way in which you understand eat dishes. So it says you can't go to the sweet first. What do you have to first start off with in cuisine, according to like bitter? Yes, and you know Bengali, you have like dishes like shukto and things like that, which are very bitter. So you have to go through the bitter. So sometimes philosophy sometimes can be a little bitter. I mean, some of you, I'm sure there's lots who relish the philosophy, but you know, like knowing the tattva is sometimes, you know, it takes a bit of hard going, you know? Like even if you look at what to speak of Bhagavatam, if you look at the three books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Charitamrita is probably the most rustic out of the three books. And even there, the Adilila, the first like sort of 12, 13 chapters is just tattva, like invocation and, you know, like sort of understanding the tattva of the pancha tattva and things like that. So we can see that there's a need for tattva first, which is why we have, even in all the books, you have what is called the Paribhasa Sutra. Right? The emperor verse of the scriptures. Does anyone know what is the emperor verse, the Paribhasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam? That's it, yeah. Ete chamsa kalapam sam krishnastu bhagavan swayam. Right? Establishing Krishna's supremacy. That's 1:3:28. Does anyone know what is the Paribhasa Sutra for the Bhagavad Gita? Okay, very good. Actually, this is a trick one. There's two. Well, actually, if you think about it, there's three in one sense, but we can go with two for now. What I mean is this. So there's Aham Sarva Shaprabhavo, Mata Sarvam Pravartate, right? Iti Mata Bhavajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. Right, okay, there's another one, which is Man Mana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru Mam Yavashyasi Sattam Te Pratijani Priyosi Me. And it's interesting, these two verses, one is actually Tattva Vichar, so it's deliberated based on Tattva, and one is rasa vichar. Now, based on what we just discussed, the distinction between tattva and rasa, would you like to guess which one is tattva vichar here and which is rasa vichar? So, aham sarva prabhavo, basically Krishna is saying, I am the source of all spiritual material worlds, everything comes from me, the wise who know this, they worship me, right? Yes, it's tattva, isn't it? Because it's establishing the position. And then, manmana bhava mad bhakto is how do you now relate to me? Thinking of me, worshipping me, offering me. So you can see that the tattva and rasa are always pervading through the scriptures, always side by side. And so that's why it's very important that we know the tattva with the rasa. And if you look at this purport, Prabhupada, that's what he's doing. He's talking about art, music, dance, ras lila, at the same time talking about transcendental understanding, understanding of Vedic scriptures, side by side. And this goes on as well. Like if you look at Brahma Samhita, does anyone know what is the Paribhasa Sutra, Brahma Samhita? Very famous one. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadi Radhi Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Again, is that more tattva vichar or rasa vichar? Ishvara. Tattva, isn't it? Yeah, I'm the source of every cause of all causes. I'm the Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is the supreme controller, right? Establishing tattva. Then, of course, you got Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. Any idea? I'm sure a lot of you have done Bhakti Shastri, will know these verses. And doesn't even know what is the Paribhasa Sutra of Nectar of Devotion. Fantastic. Yes, thank you, Smara Hari Prabhu. Anya Belasita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Navritam. Anukulyena Krishnanu, Silanam Bhakti Ruttama. So, again, what we're looking at here is rasa or tattva? Well, because he's talking about you worship with no motivation, uninterrupted, unmotivated, right? So it's almost like, you know, like giving, like, how do you relate to me? How should you be relating to me? So you can see that even the Paribha Sutras of our main scriptures, they have got a Tattva foundation plus some Rasa foundation as well. Okay? If you look at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well, you know, even when he built up the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, he started off with the Tattva and then built the Rasa on top of, layer upon layer, on top of the Tattva foundation. So, I'm sure, for those of you who know a little bit about how the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy took root, we know that Mahaprabhu took various key points from the different Vaishnava Acharyas, but he took two key points from the four main Vaishnava Acharyas from the four Sampradayas, right? So you got Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya. So, and you can see that, for example, with Madhvacharya, does anyone know what are the two things he took? So one thing is complete defeat of Mayavad philosophy. You know, Madhvacharya always, you know, has his two fingers up like this, yeah, to show that there's always duality. It's not just, you know, one, right? That's like a direct opposition to what Shankaracharya was giving at that, you know, before then, right? Complete defeat of Mayavad, plus the second point is service to deity of Krishna, accepting the deity as an eternal spiritual being, right? Then you got Ramanujacharya. From him, Mahaprabhu took concept of bhakti, unpolluted by karma and jnana, and then also service to the devotees as a key principle. So again, you can see there's rasa and tattva, even in the points that Mahaprabhu is taking. Vishnu Swami, Mahaprabhu took from him sentiment of exclusive dependence of Krishna, plus the path of raga bhakti. Actually, this raganuga bhakti, Mahaprabhu even mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that this is not something I've given for a long time. Because before that, it was Vedi Sadhana Bhakti that we are doing, which is based on the Guru's instructions. We follow the instructions and we work through it. Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti is where then you start to do it, but with a mood, with a certain mood. I mean, there's even a very intense form of Raganuga Bhakti where, you know, like where, again, maybe for advanced souls, advanced environment, where you're even given like your kind of like position and you work towards cultivating that mood towards your, you know, your Siddha Pranali, that mood. Of course, Mahaprabhu, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, Prabhupada, they have given us the holy names. So with that, all the rasa is contained within the holy names as well. Plus we have a mood of servitorship. That's how we have the Trinadapi Sunichena mood, right? Which is why that's what we recite every day before we even recite the holy names, chant the holy names. But anyway, the point is a path of Raga Bhakti, again, taken from Vishnu Swami. And then Nimbarkacharya, from him, Mahaprabhu took, taking full shelter of Radharani and the high esteem for the gopi's love for Krishna. So, Mahaprabhu took all these points. That's from four acharyas, 2 points each, right? 8 points in total. And it's interesting that the last 2 points, taking shelter of Radharani and having the high esteem of the gopi's love for Krishna. So if you look at this verse now that Prabhupada's talking about, Prabhupada is also mentioning the same thing, that the consorts of Krishna, that actually Vishnachakri Thakur is actually mentioning that the nectar from the mouth is also being transferred to his different consorts and then manifested through the finer arts of music, dance, dressing, decorations, which are then all relished by the Lord. Prabhupada then talks about this gopi's love for Krishna manifesting in the Rasleela and things like that. But again, it's built on a foundation of tattva. Now, another thing it's mentioned here is without having the Vedic knowledge, one can hardly understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's rasa, dance, and music. Right? Okay, yeah. By gradual development of transcendental knowledge, one can rise to the stage of the transcendental arts of music and dance displayed by the Lord in his rasa lila. Okay? But the pure devotees of the Lord, however, can equally relish the nectar in the form of profound philosophical discourses. So, One of the things, and this is also very much in line with what Srinivas Prabhu was talking about yesterday, Prabhuji recited the Madhukin Bhagavad Dharma prayers. And there's a mood here that Prabhupada had when he's reciting these prayers. And you can see here as well that when we're trying to understand the Vedic scriptures, even before trying to look at the Rasa Leela and understanding these romantic or these kind of intimate kind of emotions, even trying to understand the scriptures is not that easy for us. In fact, it'll be very difficult, extremely difficult. If you look at Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 87, verse 1, Parikshit Maharaj, he's asking Sugata Goswami that, O Brahmana, how can the Vedas directly describe the Supreme Absolute Truth, who cannot be described in words? The Vedas are limited to describing the qualities of mature nature, but the Supreme is devoid of all these qualities, being transcendental to all mature manifestations and their causes. So, in the verse itself, when Parikshit Maharaj is asking this question, he actually says that the Lord cannot be described in words, and the word he uses for this is anirdeshya, anirdeshya, okay? And then, Prabhupada and his disciples analyzed this verse, that how can we then understand the Vedas if the Lord is beyond material qualities? We know that the Lord is known as Nirgun, right? Without any material qualities. And yet we're using material words to try to understand material qualities, right? So it said actually that it's... Okay, it says, Sugadev Goswami says, the Supreme Lord has given us material intelligence, senses, mind, air, so that we can indulge in our desire for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, then gradually, slowly, slowly become elevated, life after life, and then eventually attain liberation. Right? So then the point is that then that these words, they can be utilized either for material usage or for spiritual usage. However, it's not that when we're reading the Vedas or even using our material words to describe the Lord or His glories, it's not even that we may be accurately describing, right? This is a wonderful purport from Garga Samhita, where it's mentioned, it says, although mundane language fails to describe the Lord, okay? Mundane language cannot describe the Lord, even though we're reading in mundane language, like English, right? These purports, right? He agrees to accept the Lord, agrees to accept glorification by the transcendent expressions of his loving devotees. So similarly, a prominent man relishes the address Dada by his infant, but not from others. So in other words, Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki. So in other words, a baby is not going to be able to glorify his or her father properly, because they're a baby. Their consciousness, their level of understanding is not great. But just by crawling to the dad and saying dada or whatever, goo goo, gaga, whatever it is, the dad is responding to the sentiment that, okay, you can't really talk to me right now, but you know what, I know what you're trying to say to me, and I'll accept that. So even with the scriptures, it's not that the scriptures can actually really like fully describe what the Lord is, but for us, it's the best thing we use to try to give our glorification of the Lord. Like I remember Buddha Bhavana Prabhu once mentioned, it's just like when a similar example, really, like, you know, when a little child draws like a picture for their mother on Mother's Day, you know, and, you know, for a little child to draw a picture is not going to be very good, you know, like with crayon and like, you know, like with like a stick drawing with a circle on top or something and all the rest of it. But then the mother will be like, oh, this is so good, you know, and we'll put it on the fridge for a year or something, you know, like to really appreciate it. So that's basically our position. It's not actually our own ability that's going to help us understand this knowledge. It's the endeavor, but with that prayerful mood. That's why when Prabhupada wrote the Madhukin Bhagavad Dharma, he says, I am nothing, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, he says, Was it nachao, 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 shemate? Just dance, dance, make me dance as you wish, right? I basically Prabhupada saying, I'm helpless, I can't do, I'm in this land of passion and ignorance, right? Rajas tamas gune era shabayochana nahi keno she prashanna, right? Boro kripa koile Krishna adame proti ki lagi anile eta kore eva goti, right? Like, he's basically just emphasizing his helplessness, right? And then basically just asking Krishna to help him, just make me dance as you will. So, similarly, I remember once when I was serving Pankajanri Prabhu, and Prabhuji was saying to me once that, you know, it's not even the quality of our rounds that's necessarily taking us back to Godhead. How good are your rounds? Like, I don't know who can honestly say, like, okay, I'm chanting complete Suddhanam. Maybe some would, but, you know, a lot of us may not be on that level where we're chanting pure rounds and, you know, holy name, you know, immersed in the holy names. But it's the endeavor that we're giving that is attracting the mercy, which is then, and that basically Krishna's pulling us towards him. Gauranga Mahaprabhu is pulling us towards him. It's the endeavor. And then as we then, and through the endeavor, Krishna is giving us the knowledge, the understanding. Right? Mata smitir gyanam apohanam cha, right? From him comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So like this, we understand that if we have to, and if you look at all these verses, they're all prayerful in their mood. Because it's only through the prayers that we can actually understand what the Lord is talking about. Otherwise, this knowledge can be completely blocked to us. Like even Krishna says to Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam, Pavitram Idamuttamam. Right? Raja Guyam is the most secret knowledge. And yet the thing is, right, you see so many millions of Bhagavad Gitas distributed throughout the world. And even before like ISKCON got started, there was Gitas in circulation around the world for centuries and centuries. And yet Krishna's saying this is the most confidential knowledge, because it's not just a matter of reading it. It's about a matter of Krishna bestowing his mercy upon you to then unpack what the Gita is actually really giving you. Otherwise, for a lot of people, if you're just having a mood of just, I'm going to understand this by my own ability, it will just be ink on paper. It won't ever go beyond that. So, but the key thing is the mood then, like the Jaladuta prayer, that mood, or the prayerful mood of Trinadapi Suni Chena, which Mahaprabhu gave in the third verse of the Shikshashtakam. So yeah, I think I just wanted to share that in terms of the relationship between tattva, the need for tattva, the need for the right mood in which we understand tattva, which will then get us to understanding the rasa. So now that we've established these three points, then we can go on to this connection that Prabhupada makes, which I think is quite fun actually, about these Vedic scriptures and how they manifest in the form of art, dance, drama, and things like that. So actually, you know, we often talk about Yukta Viragya, where we utilize our sensual activities in Krishna's service. But we can actually flip it the other way around. We're utilizing it because we've forgotten how to utilize it properly. And actually, these sensual activities were meant to be utilized for Krishna in the first place. But we've actually then been utilizing it in different ways. So it says that Vaishnav tradition, you know, the whole concept of drama is actually been in Vaishnav tradition from the beginning, right? Can anyone tell us any famous Vaishnav plays? Okay, so you got Lalita Madhava, and the other one, do you know that one that goes with it? Vidagdha Madhava, yeah? You got Lalita Madhava, you got Vidagdha Madhava, you got this very, very old Vaishnav drama called Balcharit, right? And it says that the main principle of drama is actually to convey rasa, right? The rasa itself is a manifestation of the spiritual experience. So when people do dramas, in at least from when talking from a Vaishnav concept, it's actually meant to create a mood of rasa for the Lord, not just for the audience, but even for the actors themselves. Now you see why Prabhupada is very emphatic that when he wants Vaishnav dramas to be done, they should be done by devotees. You know, not just hiring professionals, because a professional will not have the right mood in which how to do this kind of drama. If you look at, like Smara Haripuru mentioned, Madhura, this Vidagdha Madhava, the predominant rasa in Vidagdha Madhava is actually loving affection, Madhura Rasa. If you look at Lalita Madhav, In it, the mood is Aishwarya Rasa, the mood of reverence. Because the Lalita Madhava is more to do with Krishna's activities as a king in Dwarka. Okay? But the whole purpose of these dramas is to enable, like, you know, higher spiritual emotions to be accessed to the mass people. Because not everyone's going to relate to, like, Gatha, like in a philosophical discourse. Right? So therefore, these dramas were there. If you look at, for example, the word Bharat, you know, we know that Bharat comes from King Bharat, but there's also another etymological understanding of that word. And this relates to music. So Bharat, Bharata, Bha comes from Bhava, Ra comes from Raga, and Ta comes from Tala. Right? So Bhava, Raga, Tala. So this is a land where great emotions are expressed through melody and beats. Right? Bhava is like expression. Raga, so those of you who know like classical music, like, you know, like Vedic classical music, raga is a framework for composition, improvisation. Tala is, you know, tal, right? You know, repeating rhythm, patterns, things like that. Now let's look at all the top, like, you know, amazing devotees of Krishna. Narad Muni, when he's actually like, you know, preaching, does he not use music? Yeah? Doesn't even know what instrument Narad Muni has when he's preaching the glories of Krishna? A veena, yeah. Right? Doesn't even know Saraswati? Yeah? Doesn't even know her instrument? Sitar. Well, sitar, veena. Krishna himself. Literally, right now, as we're looking at Krishna, he's got an instrument in his hands. The flute. Even Lord Shiva, when he's glorifying Krishna, you know, he also uses an instrument as well. Yeah, the drum. You know, I don't know, what is it called? The dumburu or something that you spin around, right? So we can see that actually the whole purpose of music is actually meant to glorify Krishna. Not that we use music to utilize it for Krishna. It's meant to be for Krishna in the first place. That was his ontological function. Now let's look at poetry. Right? It's not that we have a need, you know, we desire to compose poetry so we do it towards Krishna. Poetry was created to glorify Krishna. One of Krishna's names is Uttama Sloka. Does anyone know what the meaning of that is? One who is to be praised with the most choice poetic words. Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, without poetic language and spiritual realization, it is impossible to describe spiritual subjects. So actually, that's why, you know, one of the qualities of Vaishnava is they become kavi. Poetry is not like just this wishy-washy thing that we use. Actually, it's a necessary function to glorify the Lord properly. We have to have poetry there. Okay? Which I think is beautiful that we've got this opportunity to, you know, use these artsy stuff in Krishna consciousness. Right? Through poetry, the most intimate revelations can be given, which is why in Sanskrit, you have a term called stotra. Right? Everyone, you know, has probably heard of the word stotra. Stotra means to praise in a poetic form. Nam stotra. Right? And then there's even you've got the term champu. Right? Gopal champu. Ananda Vrindavan champu. Right? Champu actually is a blend of verse and praise. So poetry, music, is meant to glorify Krishna. We have famous, does anyone know any famous Vaishnav poets? Jayadev Goswami, right, who wrote the Gita Govinda, right, 12th century poet. Anyone else? Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami? Yeah, of course, Kaviraj, right? Yeah, you've got Chandidas, Naradam Das Thakur, right, who wrote the Guru Vandana, yeah? He wrote the Hari Hari Bipale, right, Janamaganainu, right, famous Prabhupada's favorite bhajan. Right? So you can see this now. And okay, but let's go even further. We've covered, was it music, poetry, dance? Dance. What was Mahaprabhu doing at night in the CC? He's dancing in his nocturnal kirtans, isn't it? What was Krishna doing on top of Kaliya's hoods? He's dancing in it. I mean, punishing Kaliya, but also, you know, dancing at the same time. We have the famous quote in the spiritual world, every word is a song, every step is a dance, right? If you look at even classical Indian dancing, right? You have like, for example, Bharatanatyam, Kathak, Kathakali, Manipuri dancing, they were all actually just there to actually depict various pastimes of Krishna and his incarnations. That's the whole point of these dance forms, how they were created in the first place. Right? So the purpose of art and music is to glorify the Lord. It's not that we're just dovetailing it, right? It's actually meant to be for that. This is what it's meant for. And of course, we may not be on that platform yet where we know that we can just focus it fully for Krishna. So we have an urge to do it, so we have to direct it towards Krishna. You know, anasaktasya visayan yataraham upayunjata nirbandha Krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya muchata. You have to do yukta vairagya. But once you come to a certain level of realization, you realize, oh my God, it's not even that I had an urge that I had to focus on Krishna. It was always meant to be for Krishna in the first place, you know? I think I'll finish there, but I'll finish on this last verse, which really I thought encapsulates this what purport that Prabhupada's been talking about so beautifully. And this is actually the summary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and actually the summary of Krishna consciousness. This is a verse given by Srinath Chakravarti in the Chaitanya Manjusa. 100% I think most of you will have heard this verse. So I'll try and recite it. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vraje Satanayas Tadhama Vrindavanam Ramya Kachitu Pasana Vrajavadu Vargena Nakalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumartho Mahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprapurmatamidam Tatradharana Para. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is to be worshipped along with his transcendental abode, Vrindavan. The most pleasing form of worship for the Lord is that which was performed by the gopis of Vrindavan. Srimad Bhagavatam, the spotless authority on everything, and pure love of God is the ultimate goal of life for all men. These statements for which we have the highest regard are the opinion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this purport, and this last, the verse that I just read, four points that are coming up that summarize the full Krishna consciousness. Goal is prema. Prema pumarto mahan, right? The soul needs to give love and be loved. So we all want to access love. That's probably one of the reasons we came to Krishna consciousness. What is the object of that love? Krishna. Goal is love. Object of that love is Krishna. Who do we emulate in that devotion of love? Who are the primary exemplars of that love that we can... The gopis of Vrindavan, right? And just like Prabhupada said here, the consorts of Krishna, right? The Rasalila, these gopis. But, now the tattva comes in. What's the handbook that we use to enable us to emulate that gopi's love for Krishna of Vrindavan and experience that love with him? Srimad Bhagavatam. So even within this verse of Mahaprabhu's teachings, you got the rasa and the tattva going hand in hand. Even with the artistic things that we've talked about, you've got the foundation of tattva. So you can see it's very important to make sure that it's very, you know, rasa I think tends to be a bit more enjoyable than tattva in many cases. But we have to have the tattva first. And then the rasa, then we can really relish the rasa. And in a prayerful mood. Okay, I'll finish here now. Any thoughts, any questions? Yes, Prabhuji. From Ramanujacharya, it's concert to bhakti unpolluted by karma and gyan. And the other point was service to the devotees. Yeah, Mahaprabhu took two main points from each of the four Vaishnava Acharyas, amalgamated it, and of course brought in the extra understanding of Achinta Beda Abeda Tattva as well. Inconceivable oneness and difference from the Lord. Okay, any other... thoughts, questions? Yes, Vishal Prabhu.
What does Siddhanta mean? Siddhanta, tattva and Siddhanta, what are the differences?
Difference between?
Tattva and Siddhanta? Is it Siddhanta?
Oh, okay. Tattva is the ontological position of a particular... you know, entity, person, concept, whatever, its position. Siddhanta is basically how all the different tattvas combine together. Siddhanta, siddha means perfect, anta means conclusion. So it's the, what is the perfect conclusion? So it's basically how do all the tattvas relate to each other. So say for example, you are Bishal, your tattva is, you know, you're a young man, brahmachari, living in the ashram, right? Who does this services. That's your, at least your current tattva that you're in. You got Paramakaruna, who's also a brahmachari, but senior brahmachari, who trains the younger brahmacharis, right? So the siddhanta here is that between, like the siddhanta here is that Param is a senior, you're his junior, you follow him, and you become a better brahmachari by following. So the perfect conclusion is that he's your teacher, you're his disciple, and you're both situated in brahmacharya, right? So it's basically how the different tattvas work together, and how they relate to each other, yeah? So siddhanta is basically more overarching. Tattva is more like, you know, distinct truths of each entity, of each identity, and siddhanta is how it all kind of like, you know, like coordinates together. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
I'm going to get a difficult question now.
What was the Paribhashya Sutra of this Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Okay. I can't remember, but I know that it's to do with situating Lord Gauranga in the innermost chambers of your heart. You know, there's a very famous verse where it says about Krishna. It's let me have a look. Well, give me one sec. Just someone can help me here. I know it's, that it's to do with installing Lord Gauranga.
I googled it earlier. It's Adi Lila, chapter 1, text 4.
Could you recite it for us?
The English?
Yeah.
May the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachidevi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart, resplendent with the radiance of the molten gold. He has appeared in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most sublime and radiant mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love.
Yeah, there you go. Adi Lila, right?
Guess Krishna Das Kaviraj?
Yeah.
Is it first chapter of Chaitanya
Charitamrita? Adi Lila, which chapter?
One.
The Adi Lila is Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. First 14 chapters, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is basically establishing an invocation for Mahaprabhu's tattva. Okay. Yes, Prajna Prabhu?
What comes to mind is the last verse of Shikshakshtakam, which is exemplifies Mahaprabhu's teachings in the 8 verses. You know, I mean, and it says it's about unconditional love. I know no but Krishna is my Lord. Even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before him, he's completely free to do anything and everything, for he's always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. But that reminds me of another, you may think it's actually a mundane song, but it says in this particular song, which was a pop song, I love you for 100,000 reasons, but most of all I love you because you're you.
Ah, oh, very nice. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you, Prajna Prabhu, for that. Yeah. Yes, Mataji.
Srila Prabhupada said, I heard one lecture not so long ago that he said that one is born a poet. You cannot become a poet. That's Prabhupada's word.
Oh, that actually, it's interesting you mentioned that, because you know in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a famous verse, you know, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prame, Shadu Kobunai, Shavanadi Shuddhu Chite Kore Udai, the eternal love for Krishna, it's already established in the hearts of living entities. It's not something to be gained from another source. Only by hearing and chanting, this love naturally awakens. So that means we are actually originally pure. We are pure devotees. It's just covered. So if we're pure devotees, that means we have all the pure devotional qualities. And one of those pure devotional qualities is Kavi, poet, right? You know, the 26th version. So that makes perfect sense that, yeah, we are actually originally all poets.
So you're saying all pure devotees are poets?
Yeah. I mean, all pure devotees have got the quality of Kavi, of, you know, there's of Daksha, being expert at everything, of being Mauni, silent, only speaking Krishna consciousness. So when the more and more purified we become, these qualities that are lying dormant within us, they'll come through. We see that as well with, you know, when devotees advance more and more, you see, like, they do incredible things, and, like, you know, they you just like to hear them. You can hear them all day long, and they manage to just, you know, articulate things so beautifully because the qualities are all coming out, you know, so...
Sometimes when you have a child, when you're a parent, and eventually in their life they grow up, and one day you realize, oh my God, they are poets, the way they write or speak.
Yeah.
It's a realization. And you don't know if they are pure devotees. You don't even know what caliber of devotees they are. But, you know, poetry comes out of this person. In the material world also we have poets that they don't look like pure devotees, but they're poets. And Srila Prabhupada says, poet, you're born, you're not becoming one.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.